ABC Radio Australia.
Day one of the COP30 UN climate talks is underway in the city of Belém in Brazil. This year's climate talks is of special significance, marking 10 years since the Paris Agreement was signed. Thousands of foreign delegates are there, including Pacific officials, as developing countries apply pressure on industrial nations to commit to reducing carbon emissions. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has issued a rallying call for the world to commit to limiting global warming.
The hard truth is that we have failed to ensure we remain below 1.5 degrees. Science now tells us that the temporary overshoot between the 1.5 limit, starting at the latest in the early 2030s, is inevitable. We need a paradigm shift to limit this overshoot's magnitude and duration and quickly drive it down. Even a temporary overshoot will have dramatic consequences. It could push ecosystems past irreversible tipping points, expose billions to unlivable conditions, and amplify threats to peace and security. Every fraction of a degree means more hunger, displacement, and loss, especially for those least responsible.
But a big difference to this year's gathering has been the lack of Pacific leaders at the event. Now, this comes as the US withdraws from the Paris Agreement, with President Donald Trump calling climate change a hoax. Well, on the line with us from Belém is the head of Greenpeace Pacific, Shiva Gandan. I believe it's just after five there in Belém, so good afternoon, Shiva.
It's 5:15 here.
Here we go. Well, Shiva, look, thank you for joining us. Could you sort of really just share with us, describe the atmosphere there in Belém, even the city itself? Because I know we hear there's like thousands of foreign delegates there in the city.
Yeah, Belém is actually extremely beautiful. And this city in the Amazon, I think, has been waiting to host this conference for the world. However, there has been quite a few concerns actually with the struggle to complete the infrastructure of the conference on time and the pressures that has been put on the traffic systems, which already has a lot of pressure as it's a very busy city. There's tens of thousands of people coming from across the world with very different privileges, you know, and very different needs, and the city has been still extremely welcoming. However, the conference venue itself has had quite a few challenges with pavilions that didn't have any electricity, so that, like, the Moana Pacific Pavilion, for example, had to cancel a few of the events, etc. And hopefully, we'll see how it unfolds actually in the next few days.
Yeah, Shiva, look, there, you know, there's thousands of delegates there, but there's been an absence though with our Pacific leaders. I think from our count, only Seranga Whips Jr. from Palau and just James Marape from Papua New Guinea. Why do you think this is the reason, or that there is a reason for the declining numbers?
Yeah, so I think the heads of states, there's low numbers, but some ministers are also turning up. It's challenge, especially to travel to Belém itself. For example, one of the Palau delegates had to take 7 flights and 3 days just to get there.
Wow.
The cost of accommodation, the cost of just traveling to this space and then spending 2.5 to 3 weeks first, and then the travel back and forth, another extra 6 days, just takes a lot of time away from Pacific government leaders who have to be at home also to be present for their communities and for their country.
Now, I want to head to US because, you know, they've pulled out of the Paris Agreement, and we know that the UNFCCC process, does it mean, I don't know, that there's just, is there any point in coming to COP anymore if the world's biggest economy is no longer party to it?
The US has traditionally been blockers, you know, in this process. So sometimes not having them in this process actually helps a lot of the discussions because the blocking tactics are not present. However, it's a bit more bit more seriously concerning the tactics that they have recently started taking in the multilateral processes. They withdrew themselves from the Paris Agreement. They have withdrawn themselves from the convention. But they are using bullying tactics and threatening behaviors. Example, the recent International Maritime Organization's Net Zero Framework decision where they threatened certain countries on their visa status, on putting trade tariffs onto them. And this creates a little bit of a fear in this environment. However, if you think about it, the rest of the United Nations are present because they want to at least put their thoughts and their minds to a system that they think it's working, a multilateral environment. And that is what's more important. You know, we have one country that's not there, but we've got 190-something countries that are still present because they want to ensure that we have a future that is climate just and brings about the right things for the climate vulnerable nations across the world.
Well, yeah, let's get into day one then. What was that like at COP? Do we know if discussions on fossil fuel reductions begun at all?
Day one has been quite chaotic, to be fair. There's been heavy rain, long lines. There's been unfinished building sections, extremely expensive food, etc. But I think the negotiators are trying to get things started as soon as possible. And that was visible with the adoption of the agenda, which sometimes takes a couple of days to come to fruition. You know, so the pre-sessions already had discussions around fossil fuels. But in the main session, it hasn't really had the space yet to discuss as there hasn't been many sessions of negotiations present. However, the president of Brazil, President Lula, made a statement today, and fossil fuels was present in his statement, but he countered it with mentioning a lot of sustainable fuels, which is not the solution the world needs to address the climate crisis. You know, we need a clean, a truly green and a just way to try and transition away from fossil fuels.
And, of course, is that in line then with what Greenpeace wants out of this year's COP?
Yeah, Greenpeace has quite a few things because we're a global organization and we've got national regional offices across the world. But in terms of Greenpeace Australia Pacific, we have a very clear asks around this. One is around the 1.5 degrees and limiting it to taking decisions at this COP that ensures that we come back to the 1.5 degrees, because this means a lot for a lot of people across the world. It is a matter of survival. It is a matter of people losing lives, children not speaking their own languages because, you know, like Tuvalu, they may have to slowly sign away their futures in a country that only speaks English, huge amounts of displacement, intense storms, etc. So there's so many things that is a matter of survival for our Pacific region if we don't keep it to 1.5 degrees. So Greenpeace's one of our key things is around keeping global temperatures to 1.5 degrees. But then there's also the finance that is necessary to do this. And we, a crisis like the fossil, that they are the ones who are responsible for this, and they need to put the money on the table so that climate vulnerable communities can adapt to the climate crisis, but also the world can transition away from fossil fuels.
And how much do you expect that to sort of change or be implemented? Is this a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan? What does that actually look like, Shiva?
Yeah, so currently we've got blocking countries, you know, in this process. But we've got a grouping that the Pacific is very proud to be part of, which is called the Alliance of Small Island States. And they are holding the line on this 1.5 degrees Celsius. And it's not a 1-year thing. It's not a 3-year thing. It's for years to come. But we have to do it as soon as possible, because any decimal point above the 1.5 degree threshold and any overshoot above that means, like I said previously, a matter of survival for a lot of climate vulnerable countries across the world, and we can't afford that anymore. So the decisions taken at COP30 may feel like that it is for 1 year or 3 years, but that decision sets a foundation for what comes next, for more ambition that is required from this multilateral process.
Shiva, I know the other big issue is really COP's next meeting, COP31. Do you expect to maybe see a resolution in that, you know, sort of tussle between Australia and Turkey to host next year's summit?
Yeah, well, they have to decide it at this COP. It has to be decided by the end of this COP. I think that a decision may be coming in the second week. Australia and Turkey is playing head-to-head on this, and neither of them are pulling out. And my position is like most of the Pacific governments, most of the Pacific civil society and communities, that if the COP happens in Australia, although not in the Pacific side of our Moana, and the presidency is with the Pacific, it gives our region the greatest chance to facilitate a space under our conditions, you know, under our ambitions for our people and our communities. But this means that Australia has to allow the Pacific to lead this, to make this a truly Pacific COP and not use our nations and communities as tokenistic colours of the COP. So it's coming to a head right now at this at this forum. And if it's not decided between the two, it goes to a vote within the grouping that they are, which is the WEOG grouping. And currently, Australia thinks that they have the support for this. And if it still doesn't get decided, then it goes to Bonn, you know, like as in it's so far away from our Pacific. So the ask is that the Australian government really puts their head down at this COP to make sure that they win the bid, not just for Australia, but Pacific. But also remember, if it's in the Pacific, the world wins from this.
Which do you think, though, I just have to quickly ask, with Australia wanting to pretty much host next year's summit, would have it had made more of an impact if Australia's Prime Minister came through to COP30?
Definitely. I think it was weak leadership that he didn't travel. He's probably has his own thoughts around it, because the president of Turkey, Erdogan, wouldn't be here either. So he feels that there's no point negotiating with ministers or negotiators here rather than the president. So he's sent his team. The Minister of Climate Change will be here, who will have to then to close the deal out, whichever way it goes. I felt like that this was an opportunity for the Australian government to show that they are really serious about this and send the head of state to travel and be present at this. And the Pacific would have been present here behind him, you know, to push for that. So I felt it was a bit of a weak leadership around this, but it's not the end of the Pacific ambition if the COP is not in the Pacific. The Pacific will still keep fighting, because for us as a region, it's a matter of life and death.